VCY America presents Crosstalk, a nationwide call-in program discussing issues that have an effect on our families, our communities, our churches, our nation, and our world. Crosstalk, an opportunity for you to voice your concerns for biblical principles. And now live by satellite and around the world on the internet at vcyamerica.org. Here is today's Crosstalk.
And thank you for joining us on Crosstalk, coming your way from the VCY American Network. Friends, in critical issue that is going on here today across our nation, and certainly what's happening internationally as well. We are scheduled to have a double header here with you today. A double header for you. We're going to be again discussing the crisis at our southern border, and then during the second half of the program, we're going to catch up with Middle East expert Jimmy DeYoung concerning what's happening in the Middle East right now, particularly with the Israeli election in limbo. Much is unfolding. We'll hit that issue in the second half. First, let's get to our borders. Though the White House denies it, we have a crisis at our southern border. They don't like that word crisis, but that's exactly what we have. Our border is being flooded by illegal aliens. There are those who indicate they never would have tried coming under President Trump, but now they're telling journalists that they're coming because Joe Biden's going to be a good president for migrants, and so they're coming. The numbers are so staggering that under President Biden, illegal aliens are now being released into the United States without notice to appear. Joining us today here on Crosstalk for the first segment, we have Chris Chmielinski, Vice President and Deputy Director of Numbers USA. They are pro-immigration, but with numerical limits, and they seek to minimize illegal immigration. Chris, thank you for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
Chris, could you first give us an overview? We'll take the mainstream media out of this. Give us an overview. What is really happening at our southern border at this time?
Sure. Well, what we're seeing, first of all, is one of the biggest surges that we've seen in recent years. And the one in 2019 under the Trump administration was pretty big. But this one so far, just looking at the February numbers and the reports that we've seen of what's happening in March, we're seeing numbers that are much, much higher than what they were in the same months in 2019 and numbers that are bigger than what we've seen in the last 20 years. So we're experiencing, as you put it, it is a crisis along the southern border. And essentially, Customs and Border Protection, they're just overwhelmed. They weren't expecting it, which is a little bit surprising because I don't know, the way that the Biden administration has talked about immigration, about talking about being more welcoming, especially to people who cross the border illegally, why they didn't anticipate this happening. But they've really been caught flat-footed, and again, they're underprepared, and because they don't have space to put folks, they're basically taking their names and then just simply sending them on their way into the interior of the United States once they catch them crossing the border illegally. And it doesn't look like there's really too much of an end in sight. There's, you know, as you mentioned, the White House really isn't acknowledging this as a crisis. Mm-hmm. And since they're not willing to take any administrative steps to curb it.
Okay, Chris, we are getting a lot of telephone noise here. We're just going to disconnect right now and just have you reconnect with us, if you could do that.
Oh, sure.
Okay,
sure.
Let's do that. Okay, I'm just disconnecting right now. We're going to reconnect with him, getting a lot of beeps and hums and so forth in the line, and we'll be waiting here momentarily for that to take place. Chris Chmielinski with us here today from Numbers USA. And the picture that is being painted here is one that is not what we're getting from the White House. Matter of fact, the White House refuses to call this a crisis that is going on. And just some of the rhetoric that's been happening in the press conferences as well at the White House is just critically important to understand the cover-up that is going on in regard to this matter. We're just working to reconnect with him, and friends, we'll be, again, just reminding you that we'll be going to Dr. Jimmy DeYoung here at the bottom of the hour. But indeed, what we're seeing is the matter of people that are just being let into society here today. Matter of fact, there are a number of individuals that are just being placed on buses and shipped to communities who said, hey, we are overloaded here at this point. We cannot take these individuals coming in. We do not have the social services that are put together. We don't have the facilities that are necessary for this. And friends, these are critical times taking place at the border here as we speak. And we are still working to reconnect with Chris, but a lot of trouble that was unfolding on the line. The other issue, as this crisis continues to unfold, Monday afternoon at 1:13 in the afternoon, President Biden called a lid on it, meaning no more appearances, no more issues going on, and it very troubling indeed. So we're having trouble getting through to Chris here at this point. We will have to wait upon him for reconnect, and we can even find out up front if he is doing it as well. Okay, I believe we've got him back. Folks, welcome to live radio here on Crosstalk. Chris, we got you back with us here?
You do. Can you hear me okay?
Oh, you are much better there. Thank you so very much.
Okay, great.
So do you have any estimation as to the numbers that we're seeing? I mean, I saw this story in the Daily Wire reporting Customs and Border Protection officers said some 100,000 foreigners came to the border in February alone. What do we know about the numbers?
Yeah, that again, the number that you're is right for February. It's about 100,000, and again, going back to 2019, which was the last time we experienced the border surge, they're only about it's still a lot, but only about half that number crossed the border illegally or were apprehended crossing the border illegally mm-hmm. back in February of 2019. So it's a sign of things to come. It's too soon to see March numbers, but based on what has sort of leaked out from Customs and Border Protection, I think the numbers in March are going to surpass that by miles, and we'll see at least 100,000 again in March.
That is amazing. It's staggering, matter of fact. I mean, numbers are so huge. They're talking about using the Dallas Convention Center to house up to 3,000 male migrant teens.
Right, and just a reminder, you know, what this number represents is this is the number of folks that they've apprehended crossing the border illegally. It does not take into account the people that aren't apprehended. So who knows how many other people are crossing. And a lot of times, especially the human traffickers that are on the other side of the border will bring large numbers of people across in one section to distract Customs and Border Protection and then bring other groups in another area undetected.
I also understand that the Biden administration is planning on spending somewhere near $86 million to house illegal alien families in hotels. And you know, when that broke, I thought, wow, our National Guard troops were placed on parking garage cement floors in D.C. to sleep on them. This just doesn't make sense, Chris.
Yeah, the administration is getting a lot of pressure from especially the Progressive Caucus on this in the House of Representatives because they're seeing the images. The images don't look that much different from the surge that we experienced during the Trump administration, and they were very critical of the conditions that migrants were put in. So they have to be just as concerning now. So the Biden administration is pretty much doing everything they possibly can to make sure, again, that folks are as comfortable as possible when they cross the border illegally, all of it on the taxpayers' dime.
So why is the media being barred from showing the images from the border?
Yeah, that's a great question, and I think the answer to that is because they don't want the images of what's happening along the border to be spread across the country. We saw what happened again a few years ago, and you know, all the references to kids in cages and families being separated and all those sorts of things. Well, the Biden administration is basically forced to do the same thing because of the large numbers of people that are coming across, but they don't want to share that. So they're trying to cover it up as best as they possibly can, but you're starting to see the mainstream media really starting to get frustrated, and because they don't get access to the actual Border Patrol facilities along the border. What we've seen a lot of mainstream journalists do is go on the other side of the border in Mexico and talk to them before they cross the border, and that's just as damning for the administration because you're hearing folks saying that they're coming because they heard that the administration was going to let them in and give them work permits.
Yes, and what we're seeing really, though, should not shock us. I mean, after all, it was career officials from the Department of Homeland Security. They warned the transition team to the Biden administration that revoking President Trump's border policies would have catastrophic consequences. And right now, Chris, we're seeing those consequences.
We absolutely are. And, you know, going back to the fact that the administration has kind of been caught flat-footed on this whole situation, we saw the numbers start to increase in November. Right after the election and it was declared that Biden was the winner, you started to see the numbers spike and spike and spike. So this was happening before January 20th that we started to see the numbers increase. And again, they really haven't done anything. They didn't do anything during the transition to really prepare for it. All they talked about was giving an amnesty to everybody who's in the country illegally. And when you start doing that, you're inviting other people to come in illegally.
Yeah, you're laying out the red carpet. And I found it interesting. I've seen the photos of those wearing Biden T-shirts and saying Joe Biden's going to be a good president for migrants. And some are saying President Joe Biden promised them that they would be allowed to enter our country, so they came.
Right. And you know, when you start to look at, when you just look at the plan that Biden has put forward that's now been introduced in Congress as the U.S. Citizenship Act, most amnesty bills in the past, they've usually said that somebody had to have been in the United States within the last, they had to enter at least 2 or 3 years ago in order to be eligible. But that's not the case with his proposal. His proposal is willing to give an amnesty to everybody who is in the country by January. You know, it's again, it's rolling, as you mentioned, it's rolling out the red carpet and inviting people to come. And that's what they wanted, but they also don't want to deal with the consequences of those policies. And that's part of the reason why they're blocking the media from entering these Border Patrol facilities.
Chris Chmielinski from NumbersUSA.com with us here today on Crosstalk. What's staggering to me as well, Chris, is that we're seeing a fairly small percentage actually being returned to Mexico. I think it's somewhere about 13% that's being reported. And yet we have, if you mentioned just now the January date, if you've been here by January, what they're just releasing people into our country. No court dates, no nothing, no hearing dates. And who are they to say, well, no, we were here, you know, before January? I mean, what proof do they have for individuals to take advantage of the amnesty that's being promised for all?
Right. And we heard DHS Secretary Alejandro Mayorkas say pretty much all weekend the border is closed, the border is secure, the border is closed. And then you hear these numbers that, again, and they also said that everybody is being turned back with the exception of unaccompanied alien children. But then this report leaks, and we learn that only 13% have actually been turned back. The rest have been released into the interior of the United States. Mm-hmm. And what's interesting about the fact that many of them are being released without notices to appear, call me a skeptic, but notices to appear a lot of times serve as proof of when you came into the country illegally. So if they don't have that notice to appear, it's easier for the migrants to claim that they entered the country prior to January 1st, which is the date to be eligible for the amnesty if Congress should pass it.
Folks, we're going to take a quick 60-second break here. Chris Chmielinski with us from NumbersUSA.com. And we're going to delve further into the crisis at the border. Also, folks, we want to ask of our guest here today what people across the nation can do regarding it. So we'll be back in 1 minute. You're listening to Crosstalk on VCY America.
Back to Genesis with Dr. John Morris, Noah's Ark Explorer from the Institute for Creation Research. Dr. Morris, can you tell us anything new about the search for Noah's Ark?
Chris, the search for Noah's Ark is always on the minds of that set of people that have Ark fever, and I'm one of them. I've been involved in the search for Noah's Ark since 1970 and have led numerous expeditions to Mount Ararat. In the last 15 years or so, hardly anybody has legally been on Mount Ararat. We have, however, been able to search from satellite photography, but with no firm indication that the Ark has been found. The Bible does not predict that the Ark will be found, so we don't have that to look to, but we do have a lot of evidence. Hundreds of people claim to have seen the Ark, but we just don't have any proof. A lot of smoke, but no fire. The Ark did exist, that we're told back in Genesis, but does it exist today? Maybe.
To learn more about creation, get our free DVD called That's a Fact. Call us at 800-628-7640 and mention the promo code FACT.
Crisis at the Border. Chris Chmielewski with us here today, Vice President and Deputy Director of Numbers USA. Their website, numbersusa.com, and continuing to unpack what is going on. Matter of fact, what's staggering is last week, the president of the National Border Patrol Council said that they were on track to arrest more people in 1 year than they have in the history of the Border Patrol. Chris, that number is staggering.
That number really is. When you start to think about, again, past border surges, we had a pretty big one in 2019. We had another big one in both 2014 and 15. And those numbers were astronomical. And probably the biggest that we've seen were the early 90s. And those numbers are a little bit harder to find, but that's the same thing that I'm hearing, is they expect that this surge could easily outpace what we saw in the 1990s. And even Democrats are saying it. Representative Henry Cuellar, who represents a border district in Texas, he's expressed a ton of concern about what's happening down there.
Yeah, I understand that even some people on the FBI terror watch list have been caught trying to cross the border.
Yeah, that's the case when you have these massive border surges, is who knows who comes across, you mm-hmm. know. The bad guys figure that, okay, well, if you have these large groups of family units and unaccompanied minors that are being smuggled across the borders, we can easily just blend in. So they try to take advantage of a situation that, you know, we're in a vulnerable situation right now down on our southern border, and they figure, why not? Let's try to take advantage of it, especially if they're going to just release us.
And what's interesting is that the Biden administration continues to blame the Trump administration for what's happening at the border. And, I mean, we're having this come from not only the press secretary, Jen Psaki, we're hearing it from the Nancy Pelosi's out there, other congressional leadership as well, trying to blame and pin the blame on President Trump for the mess that we're in now. It seems to me it was Mr. Biden that revoked the emergency order at the border.
Yeah, this is it's kind of fascinating when you see some of the rhetoric that's coming out right now. And I don't know how they can blame the Trump administration. I mean, first they roll back pretty much every single Trump administration policy, which resulted in the surge that we're now experiencing. And another thing that they've gone after the Trump administration on is closing down detention centers. And that's just completely wild to me that they're going after the Trump administration for dismantling places where they can hold and detain people who cross the border illegally, because they criticized the Trump administration for expanding detention in those years. So it's just strange, the arguments that they're using, but they just hope that, you know, people are buying them, and some are.
What's your perspective of the major media across the nation on this issue? Are they masking this as you see it, or are they delving into it?
Yeah, I think they started to mask it at first and try to play it off as, oh, this isn't that big of a deal. This is, you know, this is just a temporary surge. But now they're starting to see a little bit of mishandling. And I think they're also frustrated. There comes a point in time where, you know, despite if the mainstream media is leans a little bit towards, more favorable towards the Biden administration, at some point, a good story outweighs that leaning, that perspective that they have, and it only frustrates them even more when they get denied access to something that the Trump administration, the previous administration, who they just loathed so much, basically threw open the doors and said, yeah, come in and see what's happening.
I understand also some of the local mayors are declaring states of emergency. I mean, they actually have busloads of people that are being just dropped off in their community.
Yeah, and again, this isn't a right-left thing. This is, you're seeing it from both sides of the aisle. You're seeing Democratic mayors expressing the same kind of concern that Republican mayors and elected sheriffs are seeing along the border. You know, they don't want their towns overwhelmed by these people crossing the border illegally, and you know, we're still in the middle of a pandemic, and there's really not effective testing of the folks that are being apprehended crossing the border illegally, not to mention the ones that go undetected crossing the border illegally. And we've seen reports that they have higher rates of COVID positivity than we do here in the United States. So that's concerning to some of these communities along the southern border.
It is, and the border states as well. I know the Biden team has been blaming Texas for opening up and relaxing, you know, their COVID restrictions, masking and so forth. But here they are bringing in many illegals some of the numbers, some high percentages of those with COVID is rather astounding.
Right, and they're putting them on public transportation, trains, buses, planes. You know, they're putting them into homeless centers, homeless shelters, as you mentioned, convention centers. So they're spreading them out across the Southwest, and it's. I think you're going to see some spike in the numbers in terms of COVID cases over the next month or so as a result of this.
Monday of this week, President Biden called a lid at 1:13 in the afternoon, D.C. time. In other words, won't be seen for the rest of the day. And this is just as, you know, we have this crisis just compounding. And this also came as Jen Psaki, the White House press secretary, she was fired a number of questions about the border. And then she talked about what the State Department is doing. And I just laughed when I heard this. They're putting ads on Facebook and Instagram. Don't come, out to Central America. Don't come to the U.S. And she said, we're taking radio ads telling people not to come. They even put out a comic book and an animated show. I mean, that sounds crazy to me.
It really does. It really does. And, you know, you talk about the early lid, and that's because the administration just doesn't want to acknowledge it. Because the second the administration does acknowledge this as, I think they spent most of last week calling it a challenge along the border.
Right.
But the second they start to throw significant resources at it and start to call it a crisis or use stronger words than quote-unquote challenge, well, that means it really is something that's happening on the border. And they don't want this to detract away from the rest of their agenda. It's already detracting away from their agenda. Again, the Biden's immigration reform plan that I alluded to earlier in the segment, that's pretty much dead on arrival. Everybody, even Democratic leaders, the people that introduced the legislation into Congress are even acknowledging that it's probably dead on arrival. And the House passed a couple of amnesty bills last week, and Even Lindsey Graham from South Carolina, who introduced the DREAM Act in the Senate, said that the House DREAM Act is probably dead on arrival in the Senate until we start taking care of the border crisis that's currently occurring.
Yeah. So just to be clear, the President Trump had detain and remove. That policy is out the window now, isn't it?
Absolutely. Right. It's back to catch and release. So it was detain, get all of their information, and then send them back across the border back into Mexico. And now instead what we're doing is we're catching them, taking down their name, and then releasing them into the United States, and often with tickets to hop on a bus or hop on a train to go somewhere.
And, you know, this leaves people in the level of frustration all across this nation. We've got people listening coast to coast and asking, what can I do? How can I make a difference in this? You know, it's just abhorrent as to what's taking place at our southern border. How can I get engaged? What do you suggest at Numbers USA?
Yeah, that's the best way for people to get involved. And number one, they need to call their members of Congress, their U.S. representative and their two U.S. senators, and express their concern over what's happening on the border, and say that, you know, they need to take tough action. They need to dissuade people from coming up to the border, and they need to focus on enforcement instead of rewarding people who are in the country illegally. If they're looking for ways to do it, of course, Numbers USA, my organization, we're a grassroots organization. So if they come to our website, we provide the tools that they can use to reach out to their three members of Congress.
That's numbersusa.com, numbersusa.com. Are the members of Congress, are they attuned to this? Are they getting those kind of phone calls right now? Are the American people speaking out on this? It seems like there's a flood of so many issues going on.
Yeah, there are a lot of issues. So, interestingly, that the House of Representatives just this week started a 3-week recess, so they won't be back until mid-April. The Senate's in session this week, but they'll be leaving at the end of this week for 2 weeks as well. So,
wow.
They'll be out, but at the same time, that also does mean that if they're not in Washington, it gives some of them an opportunity to go down to the border and see what's happening with their own eyes.
Right.
So we'll see what ends up happening. But, you know, it's also a great time since the members of Congress are going to be back in their home districts to make sure that they hear from their constituents and hear concern from their constituents about the situation, especially from those that are have serious concerns about what's happening down there. In terms of responsiveness, yes, we know we were directing a lot of phone calls into Congress last week, and we heard reports of the switch lines being bogged down and phones being rerouted, things like that. So they are hearing from a lot. There's a lot going on, though. In addition to immigration, you've got COVID relief, you've got HR1, you've got a bunch of other issues that are on the table. So they're hearing it from all different angles. But immigration is definitely one of the areas that Congress is getting a lot of pressure on right now.
You mentioned COVID relief. Are illegal aliens getting COVID relief funds?
So yes and no. So the way that there's a couple different ways that Congress could approach it, but the very last bill, the most recent one that they passed that has set up this newest round of COVID stimulus checks, what it does is it excludes illegal aliens from receiving the checks, but if you have mixed status families, which means that the family has both U.S. citizens and illegal aliens in the family, then they're eligible to receive it. So in a roundabout way, yes, some illegal aliens are, but the bulk of them are not eligible. But still, it's a pretty staggering number. I've seen estimates as high as about $4 billion will go to families that have illegal aliens living in them.
My. Let's hit the border wall here quickly before we close out this interview. And we understand that there's issues going on here again with this as far as is this lawsuit even coming up on this issue for lost wages for union workers and so forth?
Yeah, I mean, basically, this is unfortunately the Biden administration has just been wasting away taxpayer money because these are contracts that have been signed. And we have to make good on those contracts. We as the American people American taxpayers have to make good on those contracts. So Biden administration spending about $6 million a day to basically have a bunch of equipment sit on the border, not be used. And the administration's going to have to make a decision at some point in time because some funds were discretionary, but some funds that were passed in the last round of government spending were specifically earmarked to be used to build border fencing, border barriers along the southern border. So they're required under law to use those funds. If they don't use them, they have to have a really, really good reason, and the reason can't be, well, we just don't like it. So I think you're going to see some legal action pop up on this, but it also looks like that the Biden administration is probably going to make a decision at the 90-day mark for the administration, which is coming up in a few weeks, and we'll see if they decide to start moving forward with construction or not. If they decide not to, then I think you could really see the lawsuit start to gain some traction.
Folks, you can reach your member of Congress. Members of the House, the main switchboard going in is 202-225-3121. That's 225-3121. And to the Senate, it's 224-3121. Now, if you go to house.gov, you go to senate.gov, you'll also find their local district numbers as well. You can connect with them there. And friends, you check out the website numbersusa.com. Chris, thank you so much for carving out the time and informing our listeners on this critical issue.
Well, thanks for having me on.
Great. Chris Chemilinski with us from numbersusa.com. A quick break, and afterwards, we're going to connect with Dr. Jimmy DeYoung with an update on matters that are unfolding in the Middle East. This is Crosstalk on the VCY America Network.
There is an overwhelming apathy that has invaded many churches and youth groups. The apathy has become so pervasive that many have abandoned sound teaching and resorted to entertainment. Instead of God's Word, Activities are used to build the church or build the youth group. This troubling trend is captured in the DVD, Play the Flute, by Rich Cristiano. The story of a youth director who takes over a youth group filled with spiritual apathy. As he tries to motivate his students to get serious about their relationship with the Lord, he finds himself in an uphill battle. Although discouraged, what happens next is something he and his students will never forget. Play the Flute is available on DVD for a donation of $18 or more to VCY America. And for a limited time, additional copies to the same address are available for a donation of just $15 more. Call 1-800-729-9829.
This is Crosstalk on VCY America, and ladies and gentlemen, amazing developments going on in the Middle East as yesterday, Israel entered into its fourth election for prime minister in just 2 years. Some 39 parties contested in the election, and the results? Well, they continue to hang in the balance. Joining us, we have Dr. Jimmy DeYoung, Middle East expert. He leads the ministry Prophecy Today, constantly monitoring the news regarding Israel and the Middle East, and provides a unique blend of political, biblical, and prophetic insight that's absent from the media today. Good afternoon, Dr. DeYoung.
How are you doing, Jim? Great to be along with you.
Oh, indeed. Thank you for joining us. So tell us what's underway. Give us the developments underway right now with the Israeli election for prime minister. I mean, this is astounding what we see going on here.
It is certainly astounding. Historical. Never has Israel had four elections in 2 years. The bottom line, the possibility of a fifth election very quickly now is in the horizon as you look forward. And as of this moment, it's unclear as to what the outcome of the election is. They have about 97-98% of the vote counted. That's basically all they need to know, but there may be a change or two as they put everything together and make sure that they've got all the numbers in. Let me just take a moment to explain to our audience how the election process works in Israel. First of all, it's a parliamentary system, only one house. It's called the Knesset. There are 120 members in the Knesset. Now, as you said, 39 parties running for the Knesset this last time. When the electorate goes to the polls in Israel, they go not to vote for a personality, but for a political party. Each party has a list of 120 names on it. In other words, if a party was able to get 61 votes, a simple majority that's needed to elect the prime minister, then that party could do that. Now, nobody has ever done that. This time, I think 31 votes has gone to the Likud party, but that means the first 31 people that are listed on their party, on the Likud party list of 120, they will be going into the Knesset, and as is the case, once they tally the votes, they take a percentage. And there's, I think, it's about 4.3% of the entire vote that will bring about a Knesset member for each of the parties that have enough votes to be able to do that. That determines how many members of the Knesset each party will have. And then at that time, they endeavor, since no party has enough to just be able to do it by themselves, at that time they form a coalition, and therefore they work towards getting that 61 votes. Now, as of this minute, the right wing, and it's basically the electorate has been divided into the left wing and the right wing, just for a capability of being able to have everybody understand what it is. The right wing, which is made up of the Jewish settlers, the religious parties, the Zionists, and the Likud party, a longtime leading political party in Israel, this right wing has 59 votes, as everybody then can tell, two votes short. And the reason for that, the Likud party had a lot of members that were deciding they wanted to look to the future. They weren't so excited about this particular election, but, you know, Netanyahu has been in there for over 15 years as the leader of the country. He's going to have to retire or be put out of office sometime in the future. So many of these party leaders pulled away from Likud, formed their own little party. They'll get maybe 5 and up to 15 votes, and they'll have a say in who is going to be a part of the coalition. The problem is, though, so many of those pulling away from the Likud party, they're anti-Netanyahu more than policy-driven in this thing. So the prime minister has now announced that he is going to endeavor to try to put together what would be called a minority coalition. I'm looking at the home page on my computer here of the Jerusalem Post, and it says Israeli election. Could Abbas, who is the new kingmaker, and he is the leader of the Arab members of Knesset, could he be the kingmaker and bring it together? Jim, if they were able to do that, put a minority coalition together, that would mean that with the 59 they have and with the 6 that the Arab party has, they will be able to get over the 61 votes. But that would only be able to work towards developing or pulling together this coalition government. It's going to be a very unstable government because the Arabs, if they get upset with the Israeli members of the Knesset, all they have to do is pull out. That would bring the entire party down. And that, of course, would then mean they move to a fifth election, which would be just off the wall if they had to do that.
Some would look at that coalition with the Arabs and you know, the likes of the Likud party as being oil and water, not being able to mix together. Do they have a common bond? Do they have any kind of common ground in coming together?
The only common ground they have is forming a government. The Arabs are members of the Knesset. They vote on every single issue that confronts the Knesset. And so they need to have a government that's in place. They don't want to go with the left wing. And Netanyahu, basically, during the days of campaigning, has played to the Arab parties and the Arab people. And he has been the best prime minister for the Arab people. I'm not saying he's ready to, you know, go against every philosophy, every mindset, every policy he has. But he wants to form a government, but it's going to be very nebulous as to whether the government would stay together. And this, Jim, everybody knows was a key election because of the new Biden administration and their Middle East policies, somewhat different than the Trump policies. Let me just think a moment with these thoughts that the Arab nations would be concerned about with these members of the Knesset, the Arab members. For example, the Middle East policies, including Iran's nuclear deal, the relationship with the Saudi Arabians, the peace process with Israel and the Arab nations, which would be the Abraham Accords, and, of course, the threat of the Muslim world in Israel. So this is a very important election. It may not be really able to set up a solid government. They may have to go to a fifth election. There's never a dull moment in the political arena in Israel.
Why are we seeing such a tug of war? I mean, 4 elections in 2 years, possibly a fifth election now. Why such a tug of war, one like we've never seen before?
Basically, they are wanting to have Netanyahu step off of the political scene. That is the main reason, because if all of those other parties that had been formed by members of the Knesset in the Likud party leaving had not been established, he would have somewhere near 70 votes for this Knesset. So that's part of the reason of what's going on. And there's, you know, been some tough times with the COVID situation, with the Abraham Accords. Those have been great, but then there's still the concern that many have with the fact that Jordan is now, which has, by the way, the longest border with the state of Israel, now in a conflict with the state of Israel itself. So there's a number of issues that come, but most of them, the fact is that these parties that have been formed by former members of the Likud party, Netanyahu's party, they want to have the next generation of leadership in the Israeli government.
Any idea how voter turnout is? What kind of percentage of people are actually turning out to vote?
Jim, it's down from what the last 3 have been. I think it was about 50.7% turned out last time. It was 63 or 64% of the body politic that turned out to vote. So it's down. The people are getting tired.
Yeah.
They're weary of continually having these elections one after another.
Voter fatigue to the nth degree. The implications of this are significant, and I've seen some stories, though, that are coming out that they're kind of doubtful of a Netanyahu win. What is your perspective on that? Is that grim for the prime minister?
I would have to say I'd never put Netanyahu aside. I remember Judy, my wife, and I were in Israel, both of us journalists. We covered the first time that Netanyahu ran for the prime ministership. He was running against a man who had been long in there, in the position of government, and they said that his opponent, Netanyahu's opponent, had won at midnight when Judy and I went home, went to bed, got up the next morning, turned on the news. Netanyahu had been the winner. He is a master at being able to put coalitions together. I do believe this is probably the toughest coalition he's going to have to try to bring together. But if I was a betting man, I am not. If I was a betting man, I would bet on Netanyahu pulling it together. There's not really anybody else that could make it happen, could form a coalition other than Netanyahu.
So we saw previous the Blue and White Party advancing, Benny Gantz there. Is that the same party that seems to be in the majority at this point as well, or is there another rising star in all of this?
No, Benny Gantz has really fallen from grace. In fact, he had 16 votes in the last Knesset. That's why Netanyahu formed a government with him, a coalition government, and they would be exchanging the times of running and being the leader of the country in the prime minister's position. So the first 2 years of a four-year time of election went to Prime Minister Netanyahu to be the prime minister. Benny Gantz was the defense minister, number two position in the Israeli government. But they were to go a two-year period of time. That 2 years has not even happened. It fell apart because Gantz really is not a good politician. I said he had 15 or 16 members of the Knesset last time. He's down to four or five this time. So he's fallen. I don't think he could come back unless the people want to just get behind some man who's not going to be a threat to them, some of these other party leaders who want leadership in the future. They may join it, but it doesn't look like that would really happen.
You had mentioned the new Biden administration and all of this, and I saw, though, that it was the vice president, Kamala Harris, actually speaking with Benjamin Netanyahu. Is she the primary go-to in all of this? I mean, is matter of fact, I saw a story coming out recently that the White House, some secret memo or something, don't refer to it as a Biden administration, but a Biden-Harris administration. Is she going to be the new dominant player on the scene as it relates to relations with Israel? I mean, if so, that's kind of scary.
It is kind of scary, and I did see that same story about Biden saying he wants to be known as the Biden-Harris administration. It was the president, Joe Biden, who first called Netanyahu after a long period of time, I think almost 57 days before I ever got a call into him.
My.
So they did talk. But the next time, Kamala Harris was the one who was on the phone with him. I do believe that Joe Biden is positioning her to take over his leadership as the president of the United States. And I heard you with your last partner with the broadcast here talk about him putting a lid on at 1 o'clock in the afternoon.
Yes.
Boy, I'd like to work half a day, make as much money and have a nice house like that. But the fact is, I do think he's positioning her. And I can tell you, and I've talked with many of the political leaders and the leaders of Israel that are so much concerned about Kamala Harris. She is far even to the left of Bernie Sanders. They would have been willing to try to work with Bernie Sanders. She is so far to the left, they are very, very nervous about a Kamala Harris presidency.
We're going to take a quick break. When we come back, I want to learn more from Dr. DeYoung on how he sees this in light of Bible prophecy, the very issues that are confronted with right now, as well as we're going to probe him on this new find of the Dead Sea Scrolls. We'll be back in a minute. You're listening to Crosstalk on the VCY America Network.
For the Worldview Report, I'm Brandon House. Our website, worldviewreport.com. Recently, the former director of national intelligence for the Trump administration, John Ratcliffe, appeared on Fox News to declare that governments all across the globe have documented the sightings of, wait for it, UFOs. He goes on to state that these objects are flying at huge speeds, supersonic speeds. But guess what? They don't give off a sonic boom. They're making turns and maneuvers that are beyond the technology of today. And frankly, they're beyond the ability of a human being to sustain such 90-degree turns at that rate of speed. What are we looking at? Well, I believe we're looking at something from the spiritual realm, preparing the world to deceive the world. Preparing the world to deceive the world. Ron Carlson, my friend, who passed away in June of 2011, finished his book, Fast Facts on False Teaching, predicting this would be how the world would be globally deceived.
Dr. Jimmy DeYoung with us here in this segment on Crosstalk, the Israeli election in limbo for prime minister, and discussing this, the implications of this as well. Dr. DeYoung, let's talk about this in light of Bible prophecy. What is it that you see unfolding in light of world issues right now? I tell you, there's tensions with Iran, Syria-related issues. Give us a prophetic perspective on what we see take place.
Well, we have to have a little background. Number one, we go back to Genesis chapter 9 and verse 6, where God brought human government into existence. And then chapter 10 of the book of Genesis, he established the nations of the world and put political leaders in place to make political decisions to fulfill his ultimate will, as they would do and fulfill Bible prophecy laid out by the ancient Jewish prophets. When you look over at Revelation chapter 17 and verse 17, it talks about in the last days, the Lord will put into the hearts and minds of political leaders to make political decisions that will then, of course, lay out the scenario that will be fulfilled, the prophetic scenario that God wants to have happen, which will indeed fulfill his will. So political leaders are key in the decisions they make and setting in place that prophetic scenario. Now, as you look at a nation that can't put together a stable government after a two-year period of time, four different elections, the enemies of that government, and you've got about 9 million people that are residents, Jewish residents of the state of Israel, with about 450 to 500 million Muslims and Islamic peoples surrounding this little state of Israel who want to destroy them. So the decisions made by political leaders, both in Israel, but in the other part of the world that wants to destroy the Jewish nation, is key, and God will continue to allow that happen. He wants the Jews to understand, look, it's not going to be by your might, because you have the greatest Israeli Defense Force, the greatest Air Force in the world. That's not going to be the way you're going to win. The book of Ezekiel, chapter 38, verses 16 through chapter 39, verse 6 says, I will intercede and protect you. This may well be a part of the Lord teaching the Jewish people, look, you're not being able to pull it together, but I will intercede and protect you. So it's very prophetically significant. This coalition of nations will come together. Now they're kind of at odds with each other, but ultimately, a bottom line, they're going to have to come together, try to wipe out Israel. And we're watching all of this unfold right before our very eyes in this day.
Dr. DeYoung, when you pray for Israel, how do you pray?
I pray, first of all, for the Jewish nation to turn to their Messiah, Jesus Christ. That's the key, to understand that Jesus Christ is the Messiah. And I helped start a church. There are a number of churches, good Christian churches in Israel, and they're doing evangelistic outreach all the time. So I pray for the Jews to come to know Jesus Christ as Lord and Savior. Then 1 Timothy chapter 2 tells me to pray for those in higher authority. That's really pertaining to my own nation. But I pray for those in leadership. I pray for Netanyahu and others in leadership. They'll make the right decisions to accomplish the will of God. And then I pray for God's will to take place. You see, many want to pray for the peace of Jerusalem. There's not going to be any peace in Jerusalem until the Messiah, the Prince of Peace, comes back. So if you're praying for the peace of Jerusalem, you're actually praying for the Messiah, Jesus Christ, to come back. So that's good, that's bad. You need to know what you're praying for. But that's how I pray, and I pray that there will be those who will be able to lead many, many Jewish people to Jesus Christ. That's
Amen.
A possibility in the very near future.
Amen. Amen. Dr. DeYoung, an amazing find. We're told, a report in the news, new Dead Sea Scrolls?
I want to tell you, it may be the greatest archaeological find in the history of the world. Now, the Dead Sea Scrolls that were found, the original ones, back in the late 40s, early 50s, they're not what's in view here, but there were some slopes down at the Dead Sea. Remember, that's the Jordan Valley area, and those slopes where the caves were inaccessible to those thieves who were stealing this archaeological material and then selling it for a lot of profit. But now the Israelis have been able to use drones. They've been able to rappel down the cliff sides, go into these caves, and they found the other day a manuscript of the book of Zechariah.
Mm.
Zechariah is the Bible book that uses the word Jerusalem more than any other book in the Bible. And it talks about chapters 12, 13, and 14, the return of Christ back to the Mount of Olives. This is only authenticating our word, these Dead Sea Scrolls, a marvelous find, maybe the greatest in the history of the world.
And previous, I believe they found some portions of Nahum, and was it Zephaniah as well?
They found Nahum, I know for sure. I'm not sure about Zephaniah.
Okay, maybe it was Zechariah.
Most people
okay.
can't even find those books in the Bible anyway. So, but they did find a basket because of the atmosphere, the climate atmosphere down at the Dead Sea. They found a basket that dates back about 6,000 years ago. Great archaeological discoveries there.
Wow.
That's one of the amazing things about the state of Israel. They have a foundation, and it proves that there were Jews there 2,000 years ago. They were in the land that God had given them.
Amazing, amazing. Well, Dr. DeYoung, I know you keep abreast of so many of these issues. You present them on Prophecy Today, and you've got them at prophecytoday.com as well, correct?
That is correct. We'd love for you to come to our website. The banner over my website says, Looking at Current Events in Light of Biblical Prophecy. That's what I do. We list the top 10 news stories. You go to those stories, come back. I give you a prophetic perspective like we are doing today on your broadcast, Jim. And we got many materials, study materials that will assist you in your study of Bible prophecy.
Again, that's prophecytoday.com, prophecytoday.com. And ladies and gentlemen, as well, you'll find a number of Bible courses on VCY's Bible Institute, taught by Dr. Jimmy DeYoung at vcybible.org, vcybible.org. Well, it happened on short notice, but Dr. DeYoung, thank you for being with us here today on Crosstalk.
Always my joy to join with you, Jim, and thank you for carrying our little five-minute broadcast twice a day on VCY America.
ProphecyToday.com, Dr. Jimmy DeYoung. Folks, much to be in prayer about. We see the crisis that's happening at our border. We also see what's happening in the Middle East right now and other things that are unfolding there, even as it pertains to restoring the so-called Iran nuclear deal and so much more. Friends, keep your eyes looking up, and we thank you for being with us today on Crosstalk.
You've been listening to Crosstalk via satellite and the internet from VCY America. Views expressed may or may not be those of this station. For a CD of today's program, send a donation of $6 or more to VCY Tape Ministry, 3434 West Kilbourne Avenue, Milwaukee, Wisconsin 53208, or download by RSS or podcast from crosstalkamerica.com. And join us again for Crosstalk.